Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Coco Zing, and more. An extra-large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie. Oh, sorry.
Oh my God. And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie just for you.
Just for all of you.
How are you doing?
Not great.
I'm sorry.
Everybody over here is fine, but I had kind of a challenging night. I had a show with the very funny George Severus. If you listen to this podcast, I think you will love him. And he'll be in LA doing shows in March, so go see him. But we were at Union Hall, and I had a beer during the show, and then I saw some friends and had one beer after. So two beers over a 3-hour period. But I had two IPAs and I never drink an IPA, but three times a year, it sounds really good. And I'm I just want that. And it had been many, 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 many months since I'd had one. I came home and had the worst night of my life of I guess it's a struggle to digest that much gluten at once.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I was just up with at one point was I might be having a heart attack and I should probably go to the hospital.
Oh,
it was
I'm so
that
sorry.
Much. Just the way that heartburn and gas pain can mimic actual cardiac issues. And I was just up all night and poor Riz was just what's happening? And I was just burping nonstop, which I might still be doing during this podcast because it I've just moved on and feel back to normal. But it was such a sad thing because I was a few times in the last 2 years I've had a large serving of pasta and been oof, I just don't feel my best. And I was always it's because it's had cheese and cream. And it's no, I actually think a low-level issue with high gluten index foods is now part of my dietary life. And I've never been somebody who has any dietary restrictions or anything. And I've always had really been able to eat whatever, and it's never really bothered me. And now I'm just oh God, getting old really sucks because that's definitely just something that happens.
Oh, so absolutely.
I had a really strong mint tea this morning, and I will say that helped more than anything else I did.
Oh,
so
good.
If you're ever
that's
struggling
so
with that kind of indigestion situation, I highly recommend keeping mint tea around.
I'm so sorry. I will say that now that it's exactly the same, but having stopped drinking, I do feel like. Well, yeah, I guess that explains every time I ever felt unwell for the last, since I turned, 18 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So worth a try. And I know there are a lot of people, I don't know, I feel like people, our culture is bad. So I feel like every time, when sort of gluten allergies were coming up, people were oh, everyone's allergic to gluten. It's well, there is something to be said. Obviously people have celiacs. One of my sister-in-laws has celiacs and they have to keep their house totally gluten-free. That makes sense. You go to gluten-free restaurants. But it stands to reason there are other people could have sensitivities of certain strengths that maybe isn't an allergy or an illness.
Yeah.
But it's anything. You know what
I
mean?
In general, I think our digestive systems were not built to digest a ton of wheat and gluten. That's not – because it's not a naturally occur – it has to be kind of made into something.
And but then couldn't you make the argument that meat has to be cooked or
sugar
something?
Sugar and everything like that. Yeah,
yeah I
don't know. But it's
we process everything.
But I think in general, our – everybody has we just aren't built for it the way a cow or a horse or something is built to digest that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think as you get older, you just become more sensitive to it. I don't think I have any, I also had a sandwich and was fine. It's not, I feel I'm still fine on a low level of gluten, but I don't think super hoppy beers are part of my life anymore. And that's kind of a bummer because twice a year I really enjoyed having one.
Do you want to pour? You should pour one out into the canal to say goodbye.
Oh, yeah. And that'll be the cleanest, best thing in the canal. The Gowanus Canal, known super fun site that I live on top of.
And then just switch to canal water. I feel that'll get you there.
That'll run right through you, I bet.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad that you're feeling better now. And hopefully
maybe a burpee podcast. So just flagging for everybody.
Well, they know where we're at. This is
as
not,
if they aren't all burpee.
Nonstop, my friend.
Nonstop.
Well, let's get into it. This is, of course, our first movie for March. And this, I believe, was your suggestion, Allison. We're doing March Madness.
I just wrote March Madness in an email with a question mark, and now we're doing it. And thank you for taking a pun pitch and figuring out what it could mean.
My absolute pleasure. And we are, of course, generally focusing on movies that are about someone being driven mad, going mad, thinking they might be going mad, other people thinking they're going mad, and, of course, then... we'll find out by the end. Were they mad to begin with? That is always the question.
Feels like there's a lot of these out
there. Well, I mean, I think it's perhaps not the most primal fear, but certainly one of them. We already did Let's Scare Jessica to Death.
Yes.
But I think that's I love that movie so much. And a great example of the scary, it takes a while to understand what's going on because we are starting with a protagonist who has already been dealing with mental health issues. So then when things start happening, she's like, don't tell them. You saw that lady. Just be cool.
Yep.
And there is something that we could all imagine being in that situation of well, should I bring up that thing I saw? Or was that the thing? Or maybe I didn't see it. Maybe I'm going to ignore it. And then, of course, it turns out that's also the worst possible option.
Of course.
So the movie we are doing this week is 1973's Don't Look Now.
Yes.
An absolute fucking banger. I hadn't seen this movie in a second. Absolutely phenomenal.
I had never heard of it, and I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. It's got Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland. Fantastic.
He's so good.
And they're both excellent. He's great in this, and he's the master of he's in every scene yelling, but in a way that, the nuance to the groans, the nuance to the shouts. It was directed by Nicholas Roeg. R-O-E-G, and who's done a lot of great films. Of his films, the one that stands out to me is, of course, 1990's The Witches, which I fucking loved as a kid.
Yeah.
Was that a movie of your childhood as well?
I am aware of it. It wasn't part of my childhood, but I know that it was iconic to so many people growing up in our age group.
He also directed The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie. Mm-hmm. Walkabout, which I also remember from being a kid, a bunch of great movies.
Nice.
And this is a phenomenal film, horror film, psychological thriller. And it's based on a 1971 short story by Daphne du Maurier. I'm sorry, I shouldn't know how to pronounce her name. She wrote Rebecca. She also wrote the story that The Birds was based on.
So she's insane.
A gal about town. Yeah. We always like to have Allison watch the trailer to get us started. Allison, what did you think of the trailer for 1973's Don't Look Now?
Ugh, I mean, Donald Sutherland really, I feel like because he's been such a good actor for such a long time, most of my, relationship to his acting is him in older age because it's been movies and TV shows and things he's been, and Orange Juice commercials, lending his voice to those. So, it was, to see him younger, he's just such a good actor. So I was excited about that. I will say, I don't love someone with a milky eye.
Yeah, that's
a tough look.
It's a tough look, and again, a shorthand for somebody having, you're not going to be surprised to hear this, psychic powers.
Yes.
I'm
seeing
force
of a woman, not of Donald Sutherland. He doesn't have them in this movie. But the woman who does, really, she hit the screen, and I was I'm not happy about this.
Yeah, it's kind of a lazy shorthand at this point.
Yeah.
But I suppose in the 70s we weren't caught up with the idea of it doesn't have to be the milky eye. It could just but of course she has the second sight as indicated by her eye, and when she has a lot of information she's going to try to get out. Whether or not people will be able to listen to it, we'll find out.
Yeah.
Also the Italian title of this film is In Venice, A Shocking Red December.
Ooh.
That's a fucking title for you.
That's a title.
We also like to take a baseline scary. Allison, how scary do you find the concept of trying to stay with your spouse, who you love very much, after one of your children dies?
Oof. That's got to be.
Yeah.
just a tough, that's an everyday thing to deal with. That's not just like, ugh, we have to deal with this once a year. It's like, that's a day in and day out struggle. So.
Yeah. And I feel like there are sort of these ideas of like, if your child dies or is unwell, like it leads to divorce because of the stress of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that this is like, it never felt like they're going to break up. But then as a result, like, then it is confined to their personal dynamic. You know what I mean? It's one thing to be like, this is too much. One of us has to leave or both of us. Right. It's like, no, we are staying together. And so what happens is going to happen to both of us, mm-hmm. you know, inescapably. And finally, would you like to guess the twist? And don't look now, based entirely on our conversation and, of course, the trailer.
Guess the twist.
From what I can tell from the trailer, the child has died, but the psychic woman is either, like, communicating with her in death or perhaps is saying that the child is still alive. So I'm going to guess that the child was kidnapped and has not died.
Okay, great. All right, perfect, perfect guess. Let us begin ruining Don't Look Now. We open on a pond in a backyard in England in the driving rain. We see that it is it's pouring out, and then suddenly the rain lets up, and it's just suddenly a beautiful pastoral scene. We see a white horse running in a field nearby, and a little blonde girl named Christine in a red rain slicker and rain boots going out into the newly wet world to play with her brother, Johnny, who is frantically riding his bicycle around the backyard. We see Christine. I'm going to go and say she is round about six.
Sure.
Let's say six. And we see her find a red and white striped ball. She throws it, Allison. It splashes into the water. And this scene is incredibly long. So as soon as you see the ball go in the water, you're like, well, I'm pretty sure I know where this is headed.
Yeah.
But the kids are playing, like, nobody knows what's happening. So we're watching, anticipating the horror. Meanwhile, she's like, picks up an army doll that was in the rain and it still works. And she's kind of leaning over the water and fishing around for the ball. And inside, we see her parents, John and Laura, of course, Donald Sutherland and Julie Christie. John is an art historian and a restorationist, and he's looking at slides of a church in Venice that he has been hired to work on in the near future. And he looks over at his wife, who's going through an encyclopedia. He says, what are you reading? She says, you know, I'm trying to find the answer to a question Christine asked me. If the world is round, why is a frozen pond flat? John's like, that's a great question. I actually don't know.
Yeah.
He goes back to his slides, and he does a lot of, like, the slides are put on, like, a glass screen with a light behind it so he can look at them. They're transparent.
Yes. Great imagery in the trailer using this, and I can imagine in the movie.
Incredible direction, incredible art direction, incredible cinematography. Like, it really just makes you appreciate a movie where so much thought is put into everything. We see him looking at his slides, and he's looking at the inside of a church that he's going to be working on. And in one of the pews, we see a short figure in a hooded raincoat standing, seemingly the only figure in this church, in the pews. Meanwhile, outside, we, of course, see Christine continuing to play treacherously close to the pond. And we see Johnny run over a pane of glass in the grass, which, having grown up in the country, there was just random stuff that would just show up.
Of course.
Or, like, you'd be in a field, there's just a random old window pane.
Yeah.
So then as a result, Johnny is distracted because he's trying to pull a piece of glass out of his bike tire. Okay. So everyone's being distracted by their own individual pursuits. Laura finds the answer, which it turns out that frozen water is curved. It's just that it's curved so slightly you wouldn't see it. But say Lake Ontario, it's curved 3 degrees from end to end. So you can actually measure it. And he goes, that makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
John spills a glass of water onto his slides, and he's starting to frantically pick it up, and the one with the red figure starts to blur, and he looks at it, and we see the red of the hood bleed across the slide, and this look of knowledge pass across John's face. He knows something is about to happen. Mm. Of course, at the same time, we see poor Johnny running towards the house, and moved by this premonition, John runs outside and, of course, runs to the lake. Runs to the pond, and we see Christine's ball floating in the water. Mm. Johnny's screaming for his father, and He also, Johnny has a piece of glass. Again, a great detail. He's holding the piece of glass and he's so nervous. It's like cutting his hands because he's not paying attention to his hands.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Laura's inside, doesn't know any of this is happening yet. So we're watching her. She also sees the slide and the red bleeds across the image. And we see John plunge into the pond and bring his daughter out of the water. And he drags her ashore in the mud and he does CPR. It is too late. Yeah. She is dead. Aww. And so it is Donald Sutherland, like not even a scream, like just like a guttural howl, taking his daughter's body back up to the house. But he falls in the mud and his son is just watching him terrified. And finally, we see Laura walk into the kitchen and see through the window and scream.
Ugh, I mean.
Truly, yes. The worst thing that can happen to you. The worst possible thing you can imagine. And I think speaks to my greatest fear, which is inadvertently, I think hurting a child, but hurting anyone.
Yes.
And my greatest irrational fear, of course, leaving a baby in the car. I don't have a baby and I don't have a car. And yet somehow, the idea that you would walk outside and be like, oh no, I did
this. Baby is in the car. Yes, I know.
Completely by accident. For some reason, that is so much more chilling. So well, I wouldn't do it intentionally.
Well, I think that's thing is, like, you know that, like, yourself in your right mind is never going to intentionally hurt somebody. But you can I accidentally hurt myself all the time.
Right.
And so, like, how easy would it be for it to be somebody else that is on the receiving end of my stupidity?
I remember when I first started babysitting, which, like, as a girl, I was babysitting constantly, you know, in our town.
I mean, not me, but yeah.
But yeah, there was just, like, I think something to do. Yeah. And I went over, it was, like, my first gig, I suppose. And I think I was 13. There were two little girls, and I was so paranoid because they had a pond in the backyard. And I was afraid they were going to choke and they were going to drown. And my mom's like, don't worry. It was, like, a mother's helper thing. So the dad was home working. I just had to watch the kids. I literally go over there. These kids are in the pond the entire time. They're, like, taking off their clothes so you can't even, like, grab them if they were to fall in the water. And when it's time for lunch, they're eating, like, hot dogs and, like, everything that's cut into, like, perfectly, like, esophagus size. I'm like, no, it ended up being fine. But it was just very funny where it's like, oh, no, this is mayhem. I thought we were just going to, like, watch TV and, like, play games or something.
No, it's like literally every single thing is a danger.
Terrifying. And unfortunately, in this case, they have lost their daughter, Christine. We now find ourselves months later in Venice, where John is now overseeing the restoration of the church. He and Laura have gone there to stay the duration of the project, and their son, Johnny, is staying in the UK. He goes to boarding school. So he's at boarding school, and I forget how close Italy and England is, because they're constantly like, oh, we'll just fly back, and like it's like a couple hours.
I think it'd be
Yeah,
like New York to Florida, kind of like.
Right. Let me look out what the flight is. Look, we're looking at 2 hours, 14 minutes. So, yeah, you know,
that's
pretty short
easy
flight.
Easy breezy.
So they're there for the duration. Their son is in England. And we see John go from the church to meet his wife for lunch. And he's, of course, grousing about the project. He cares deeply about this church. He is clearly throwing all of his grief into restoring this church. And he says, basically, they have like it's like a fake bullshit facade. But and so they can either fix that, like fix like the decorative parts of it, or let the whole thing sort of sink into the river, into the canals. But they don't have money to actually restore it. So he's kind of like putting lipstick on a pig a little bit. So it's like we're doing these things, but knowing that there's a foundational issue.
Yes.
I'm assuming that is also the metaphor for
of course it is.
The film. Yeah. Laura is writing a letter to their son, talking about saying his daddy is hard at work restoring this St. Nicholas, a beautiful 16th century church, and here's some money for new gym shoes. As she's writing and reading this letter to him, John sees a woman staring at him, and she has a look of surprise recognition similar to what he had in the beginning.
Okay.
The window's open, and like you said, it's a red December here in Venice. So he goes to shut the window, and everything is gorgeous. Everything is, like, exactly what you think Venice would be, like, huge, like, double doors with windows, like, gigantically tall ceilings.
I want to go before mosaics. It's gone. I've never been to Venice.
I went in college, and it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
So he shuts the window, and that the air pressure forces a door to the canals to pop open, and something flies into the eye of the woman who was staring at him. And she's with another woman, and she asks for help getting something out of her eye, and they're sort of panicking at the table a little bit while John is watching all of this. And eventually they get up to find the restroom and they bump into the back of Laura's chair. Mm. And they so now they're both Laura and John are aware of these women as they make their way through the room. And we see this big golden brooch on the woman's suit jacket. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a woman in the moon. And we see the woman and her companion look for the bathroom and instead start to walk into the kitchen. And the Italian guys have to sort of usher them out because they don't speak Italian. And neither do John and Laura speak okay, like a little bit of Italian, but not really.
Yeah.
And Laura sees the two women struggling and gets up and says, I'll help them get to the restroom. And like goes to them and takes them inside and starts to help the woman try to get this something out of her eye.
Okay.
And the woman immediately goes, I'm sorry, we were staring. We're from the country. We don't really get out much. You know, like we're just in the big city. And we find out these two ladies, the one with the something in her eye, her name is Wendy. And Heather is her sister. She is blind. She is the woman you saw on the trailer. And so it's not much help fishing this thing out of Wendy's eye. So Laura's able to help Wendy, and they are incredibly grateful.
You talking about all this eye stuff sitting in front of the spherical paper lantern behind you is really giving me, that's like a pinky red, I don't know. It's really setting my the big, mood.
My big old eyeball. Okay, your big great. Old eyeball. I'm so glad. And as you can imagine, being in Venice, John is constantly looking at the water outside and then picturing the corpse of his daughter in the, which would be a worse place to take a job.
Yeah,
you know?
You would definitely want to be somewhere like more landlocked and without like lakes and ponds.
Yeah, like Arizona a desert plain. Or something. Yeah. But he, you know, imagine kind of a problem. And then we see an image of them leaving their beautiful country home, all packed up, driving away in the driving rain. To come on this trip, sorry. While they're in the restroom, the ladies are kind of chatting, and Heather interjects, you're sad. You're so sad, but there's no need to be. Laura's like, what? I just met you. What do you mean? And Heather tells Laura,
I've seen your little girl sitting between you and your husband, and she was laughing. Oh, yes, she's with you. She's with you, my dear. And she's laughing.
And, of course, Laura is stunned. Like, how could this woman possibly know that her daughter died?
Right.
And Heather goes, and she had a little, she has a shiny, they call it a Mac. I guess that's, like, what they called, like, a red raincoat.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, she's wearing a shiny little Mac. And, of course, Laura gasps and says, Christine.
That's such a, yeah, right. It's like.
Yeah. How could you possibly know such a thing? Back at the table, John has another copy of the slide we saw at the beginning. So with the red hooded figure in the church, and he's looking at it again. How could this figure be there? What does it mean that figure was there when we've seen the figure of his daughter? Mm-hmm. This is something that both he and Laura seem to be noodling out, but nobody's saying it, you know, in the ladies' room. There's also like a bathroom attendant watching all this being like, what the fuck are you talking about? Laura basically almost passes out, and Wendy and Heather give her smelling salts to wake her back up, being so shocked about the information about her daughter. And as Heather and Wendy go to leave, Laura says, did you really see her? Did you really see Christine? And Heather tells her she was there. She really was there. And then they leave. And we see Wendy say to Heather on the way back, I felt like you were right. I felt like you should say something. So I feel like that's – when your sister's psychic, I bet you're constantly like, should I say something to that lady?
Yes.
Should I tell her?
And God, that's got to be a tough role to fill.
And Wendy, to her, I appreciate – Wendy was like, you were right, and I felt you should say – like, good, you know. Laura, of course, is incredibly shaken but also thrilled. Like, what a thing to have someone to say and to hear that your deceased child is happy.
Yes.
And exists with you in this plane in some way, you know, spiritually.
Yeah, there's some peace to that.
Yeah, also, as we wrote, Julie Christie and Donald Sutherland are both great in this. Like, she's great in the bathroom being like, what, you know. Unfortunately, when she goes back to the table, Laura collapses. I think this just took so much out of her. She hits the table, the whole thing turns over, and everyone has to rush over and help her. And they carry her in a chair out to an ambulance gondola. So there's a lot of gondolas in this
love
film.
Love that there's a lot of gondolas. And as this a one boat is, person, that
exactly.
excites me.
Well, this one's the ambulance, and everyone watches concerned from the dock as they go to the hospital. However, Laura is totally fine, and she watches. There's like a playroom with a big window where the kids who are patients can play. So, of course, she's loving it, and she's having a great time. And finally, John comes in. And she says, Christine is still with us. Those two ladies told me they could see Christine sitting between us at lunch. And the blind sister, she's described Christine's red plastic Mac. John, of course, like many a spouse in a horror movie, has to be like, okay, is that real? Did that really happen? Or are you doing okay? And she says, I'm fine. I'm not going crazy again. I don't need my pills. And he smiles. So obviously she has been medicated.
She's been medicated.
The implication is, yeah, like, I mean, and who wouldn't?
He has not, it seems. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. So I think he's supposed to, he is our dubious sort of, the character who believes that you might be able to think your way out of a situation where perhaps there are other elements at play.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I wrote, we get so much gondola work. They take a water taxi home. And as they go.
Would love to commute on a boat.
It does look really fun. It seems like a fun change of pace. Yeah. As they go back to their hotel, Allison, they see a police scene that forces the boats to sort of back up out of the particular canal. Mm-hmm. There has been a murder most foul in Venice. And another part of this is that that's also very disorienting is that both John and Laura are constantly getting turned around and lost. Mm-hmm. So it has a very, like, to me, very Hitchcockian, you know, like, air of you could turn down any alley and suddenly you don't know where you are.
Yes.
And you're constantly looking for one another and you're lost to one another in the mists of Venice.
Which, certain Italian cities and other cities in Europe where it is those kind of, like, very narrow, curvy, unmarked streets.
And little stone bridges over the canal, which is gorgeous.
I love it.
They go back to a historic church, and Laura said, I'd like to stop here and say a prayer for Christine. And John's, again, not a praying man, though I think, again, it's like he doesn't pray, he's not religious, but also he's restoring a church and works closely with the bishop, who's, like, good friends with them. We'll meet in a minute here. Mm-hmm. And this church seems perfectly nice. Like, it's very churchy. You got your candles, you got your stained glass. There's, like, a tour group being led around. And she asks John for change. She's going to light a prayer candle for Laura. And he doesn't have, like, whatever, 50 cents. So she has to light 6 candles for however much money they had. Mm-hmm. And in the tour group, as they walk by, they're explaining the artwork in the church. We see Wendy and Heather, the ladies in the restaurant.
Okay.
John is already like, I don't want to see those ladies. And I don't want my wife to see those ladies. We already had a day.
That's
I don't
enough.
Want this to come back up. Yeah. So he kind of ducks away, and when Laura's done, they run out, and he says, we have to go back to the church. We're an hour and a half late to see the bishop, who's waiting on the job site. But they knew that he had to take her to the hospital. When Laura sees the bishop, she takes his hand and kisses his ring, which John thought was so crazy, where it's like, we're not religious like that. But they talk to him, Bishop Alberto. Basically, he's saying, like, it's funny that God loves his church, but he doesn't actually give a fuck about making sure the churches don't collapse on themselves,
right.
You know? And as for people, well, they have other priorities. And he asks Laura, you know, are you Christian? And Laura says, I don't know.
She Which says, again, John's ma'am, like, I am tonight. Walking.
Yeah, hell yeah. No. oh, yeah, Laura is Cher. The bishop sort of waves off all of John's actual information because John wants to get into it. John's like, here's what we have to do with the mosaic. We order the tiles. They have to be perfect or else what are we doing here? You know, and he's saying, like, basically the water is corroding the adhesive. So, like, even if we fix it, they'll keep falling off. And the bishop's like, yeah, what are you going to do? Like, even he is like, yeah, obviously it's falling apart. It's Venice. The whole thing's going to be fucking underwater.
Right.
But basically there's I don't even know why this was part of it. It's just funny. I think it's just to create more confusion about, like, where people are. Is that Laura and John are staying at a hotel that closes for the winter season. So it gets really cold. It's the end of the tourist season. Their hotel is closing. So they're actually going to stay with the bishop at, like, the monastery. So on Thursday, they're going to pack everything up and go and stay at with the bishop's lodgings. It's all set up, right? Back at their house, Laura takes a bath and John sort of works on his sketches. And then there's this very tender scene. I loved this sex scene when I saw it the first time, and now I appreciate it even more. And I feel like people are very down on sex scenes right now, and I think that's an example of the encroaching conservative attitude towards
America's
queer sex.
Slant right.
Yes, as it continues, not great, everyone. So I think it is good to watch sex scenes, especially one that's really well done. And so you see them, Laura's in the bathtub and they're talking, and then he strips down to weigh himself. And they're having this, like, they're just naked talking to one another. And the hotel maid comes in and didn't realize they were there. And so just walks in on John sitting nude at his drafting table. And he's like, oh, sorry. And that night in bed, they're, like, just lounging. And Laura says, you know, there's toothpaste all over your mouth. And he says, how do you eat it off? And she kisses him.
Like, I mean, I like the romance of it, but, like,
a gross way to put it. I agree. But they kiss it, and then it's like this very tender, like sexy, in this very like domestic sex, if that makes sense, where it's like they're reading the paper together, and he like holds her hand, and then she's sort of like running her hand down his back. And it's so sweet. I just feel bad because I know what's going to happen to these people. It's not going to be good.
This is the last time.
And so she's running his hands down in his body, and then he pulls off her nightgown. He goes down on her. And then they have sex. And it's this, like, beautiful sex scene where it's, like, very, like, you know, like, it's passionate and animalistic. And then it's intercut with these images of them getting dressed after sex to go to dinner. So it's sort of, like, them, like, really going at it, like, sort of being present in the moment, and then also, like, him setting his watch by the clock and her, like, putting mascara on. And I just thought it was, like, really a sweet, like, depiction of, like, sex within a long-term relationship where it's, like, all of this, you know, is part of it. And then also, like, being parents, too. And so I think where what I took from that is, like, having had this experience, Laura got this news from these ladies about her daughter's spirit and now is like full of life again.
Present and
this is like sex is like life affirming, as creative as this beautiful thing between you and someone you love. And also they're both looking good as hell, you know. And so later we see them leave for dinner, and we see the building that they are staying in, which is about to close, has a restaurant, and they're like, oh, would you come eat in the restaurant? You know, please, we need someone to come, but it's the end of the season. And they're going out to a special place. And Laura and John immediately get lost. So they're looking for this restaurant. They're going over the same bridge twice. But they're both like, presumably because they had sex and they found out that the afterlife is real. Laura's like, you know, I never minded being lost in Venice.
Yeah,
like it's romantic.
It's beautiful. Yeah.
Stunning. And they turn down a dark alley. And they come to the end of an alley, and it sort of drops off into a stone dock, basically. So you can't continue. It's like a boat launch, I guess.
Yeah.
And she looks down, and there's a rat trying to jump onto the walkway. And so Laura runs back over to the bridge to get away from the rat, which is a beautiful white rat that you see struggling to get out of the water. So again, it's like, you didn't need to have it, but it's like this, just a shot of like an animal struggling to live, and then we just don't see it again. So just like those moments of like, just so thoughtful. And John places his hand against the wall and has a moment of deja vu, and he says, I've been here. And then he hears a scream, and we can't tell, is it a man, a woman? Is it an animal? Is it a cat? And when he turns and looks, he sees a small figure in a red hooded jacket running away down one of the alleys. Allison, if that was you, what would you do?
What would you do?
I mean, I would tell my wife.
Yeah. 100%. And be like, that is, yes.
Like, and be like, look, I don't know if this is just like, there is a child with a similar coat in this area that, and coincidentally I saw it and it's bringing me a lot of feelings. Or if like everything that has happened to us, and then especially the psychic and your kind of discovery that our child is kind of with us and happy, is making me see things. It's one of those two things, but I do need to alert you to the fact that there's either a child that seems like our child running around this town, or I'm starting to see things based on information you've been giving me.
And I just think, like, if you've been married a long time, you got kids, what else are you talking about? Like, I mean, it's like, oh, no, I forgot to tell you about our child or a ghost or something that I saw in the middle of the night. It's going to come up.
It just seems like it's, like, they seem like they have such a nice relationship. Like, it would be, it's weird that he's, I assume, not going to say anything to her.
And I think that we're to think, or having seen the film, you know, it's sort of like his premonition at the beginning. Like, he doesn't want to believe this, even though he's being seen this. And unfortunately, that instinct is the wrong one. As we know for all the movies we have done, is if you're getting something and it's coming to you multiple times, I'm sorry, you have to deal with it. You have to address it.
Yeah.
Tired of fighting your kids to make their bed? Say hello to Betty's. The unique design lets your kids make their bed with just a zip. Our patented bedding includes everything you need, a fitted sheet, top sheet, and comforter in one seamless piece that zips together. Kids love the feeling of accomplishment when they can make their bed by themselves every day. Make your mornings easier and visit beddies.com. That's BEDDYS.com.
Ruined is brought to you by Factor.
It is so hard to plan and prepare and eat healthy meals every single night of the week, but I'm super excited about Factor. You get every meal is fresh, never frozen, and is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. I mean, this is exactly what I need. It's spring. I want to do stuff. I want to stay fueled, but I don't want to waste any time preparing or shopping or doing any of the stuff that it is to feed yourself as an adult.
Absolutely, and I feel like we've all had the experience of like getting home and being like, oh my God, I can't cook an entire meal. So for me, Factor is a great option in terms of like having food there, like having food on hand. It's also me not wasting groceries. You know what I mean? You can imagine, you see what I'm like on the pod. You can imagine what my fridge looks like. In this way, I have prepared meals ready to go. They're healthy. They are waiting for me.
And it's great because you can customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. So like if you're going to be eating out a lot, you can do fewer. If you're like in a kind of a vegan mode, you can do vegan. And you can pause and reschedule deliveries all to just suit your lifestyle. And they're celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals.
Head to factormeals.com/ruined50 and use the code ruined50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code ruined50 at factormeals.com/ruined50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. He calls over to Laura. They walk on. Eventually, they find the restaurant. He does not tell her about the figure in red, which, of course, fatal mistake number one. The next day, Laura and some of the Venetians, I'm assuming they're called, are watching John and the workmen lift a gigantic statue onto the edifice of the church. And it's sort of like a disgusting gargoyle-like creature. John is balanced, like, has his legs at an 80-degree angle, like, trying to put this thing on. He's wearing, dress shoes. It's like, this can't be how this would be done, but I suppose it could be. While he's doing this, he looks down, and he sees the sisters, Heather and Wendy, walking down the canal. And he sees Laura look over and then just start walking over towards him. So he's like, all right, great. She's going to go talk to those gals again. And they get around the corner, and she, of course, Amelia's like, anyway, how's it going? Did you see my daughter again? And Heather's like, oh, it's so great to see you. Did your daughter die suddenly? And even Wendy's like, all right, come on.
Yeah.
But Laura says, But Laura's like, I want to talk about my daughter. I would love to talk about her. Yeah. Let me get my coat. We could go chat.
Yeah. And she clearly, like, want to talk about it. Like, otherwise she would let these two random women just carry on with their day.
So they go walk in a nearby park, and Laura tells them all about the day Christine died. And she says, I always remember that John rushed out of the house like he knew something. And Heather says, oh, that makes sense. He's the one with the gift. Yeah, so that makes sense. The child would try to reach out for him. He has it, whether or not he admits himself or not, just so you know. He does have it. John is not going to accept this information, obviously, but Laura's like, okay, that makes sense. That was a bizarre situation. Now you're saying it. You're contextualizing it, right? And Laura says, if I asked you to, could you contact somebody? And Heather kind of bristles at that and said, my second sight is a gift from God. I don't think I should be calling back his creatures that he's already taken for some kind of entertainment mumbo jumbo. And Laura's upset by that. She's like, it wouldn't be for my entertainment to speak to my dead child. And Wendy says, hey, how about you come over for tea with John and we talk and then we could sort of see what we could do. But Heather says, I make no promises about reaching out.
Right.
Naturally, when Laura tells her this later, John doesn't like this idea at all. It says,
no, I don't want us.
Yeah, it's like, I don't want to get involved with these two ladies who tell you they can conjure the dead. But Laura's saying, and this is what we kind of already knew, it's like, I have felt empty for months and I feel alive again knowing that my child lives on in some way. And I would, if they are willing to contact her, I would like her to. And he's like, look, listen to me. And then Laura says, I did listen to you. You told me to let the children do what they want. You let her go near that pond. That's not fair.
No.
You can be mad at the pond. Also, you let her still go. Like, you could say,
you could say no.
Yeah, come on. Put a fence up or whatever.
You're one of the two parents in this household. You have power.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a low blow for, you know, having... I think it's reasonable to be like, maybe my spouse won't want to go to a seance where we try to contact our child's spirit. That's a reasonable thing to balk at.
Yes, of course. And if he says no, that's fine. You should be allowed to go on your own as long as it doesn't, like, negatively impact him. But, like, to put all that on him, a little unfair.
It's, it's a shared issue, you guys. And John says, wow, thanks for the memories, Laura. And she says, look, maybe she's trying to get in touch with us specifically to forgive. Laura tells him, maybe she's trying to get in touch with us to forgive. John, that makes him even more upset. And he's like, you can go without me. Go to your crazy women because I'm not going. And obviously he does feel guilty as any adult would if your child died. But that's not fair. This is not a situation where this is on him, you know, either. So Laura goes to the sisters who are also staying at a different hotel. And basically when we say hotel, it's like a lot of people are staying there for like weeks or months. Mm-hmm. So these are not like the Hyatt, you know what I mean? These are
It's like long-term stays.
Yes. And so like the people who run the building, like they're the manager, but they also live there themselves. Yes. Or like the woman who runs their hotel, like lives there with her sister. You know, it's like, it looks like a big house basically. Versus again, yeah, Marriott. So she goes to visit them and Wendy pours her drink and they're all sitting around this little table in their shared room. And Wendy steps out for a moment and while Heather sits at the table and she could tell Laura is looking at their bureau, which is covered in photos of their family. And she says, what are you looking at? And Laura picks up a little wooden bust of a boy. Right. And she picks it up right as Wendy comes in and says, oh, that's Angus. And she says, it jars you to lose one, but I had two more. You could too, I reckon. Which seems like a wild thing to say to someone whose kids died.
Yeah.
Replace them.
Have a few.
More. Like, yeah, damn. But luckily, Heather steps in and says, nothing can take the place of the one that's gone. And Laura starts to reach for her drink, and Heather grabs her arm and says, it's all right. It's all right. Meanwhile, John is waiting in a cafe that's essentially like at the end of the alley where Laura would be coming down. So he didn't want to go, but he also didn't want to
stop
part of it.
Or like let her be kind of on her own in that way.
Yeah.
So, I like this relationship until kind
of too.
Now.
I mean, like, it's like clearly they love each other, clearly went through this thing, and like it's going to drive both of them insane. But this is like, yeah, like this thing is going to come between them, obviously. And John decides that he is going to kind of like spy on his wife, like sneak up to the door. So he's not going to go in, but he's going to be outside the door because he wants to listen in. But he doesn't want to give her the satisfaction of knowing that he's there, basically. And when he goes, he's listening at the door, the sister's door, and he just like gets into the hotel like nobody even notices. And in this amazing moment, Heather stands up and starts rubbing her breasts over her shirt. And she's moaning and realizes... Over her own shirt. And then, but she is in that moment, she is Laura having sex with John, like early, that yesterday or whatever. Okay. And so she's like moaning. But so then when John is listening at the door, one of the neighbors comes out and it looks like he's listening to one of the women have sex. And they all start, the neighbors start yelling at him that he's a pervert and shouting. And so John runs out in a panic. Not wanting to know his wife is let his wife there know he's there, but also like all the Italians are like, get out of our house. Like, what are you doing here? And Heather collapses and Laura begs Wendy, like, what was that? What did she say? What was she saying? You know?
What did she say?
And John goes back to the cafe. And Laura comes out a little bit later after speaking to the sisters. And he says, I got really scared for you. I'm sorry. I was snooping. So he did tell her. He's like, I came and I snooped.
Okay.
And she's like, how drunk are you? And he's like, I would have had a couple, obviously. They go home. And Laura is very distraught because apparently we didn't see this part. But after, you know, Heather grabbed her boobs at behest of, like, the whatever exists beyond the veil.
Yes.
She told Laura that... she said, you know, I have second sight, and I am seeing that John's life is in danger while you're in Venice. And John's like, oh, my God. Like, please, come on. We don't know these ladies. And he goes to the bathroom to vomit because he's incredibly drunk. And he comes out, I wouldn't go in there for a couple minutes if I were you. Which, again, is just like, I love the domestic part of this because it just makes the relationship feel more alive.
Level. Yeah.
Yeah. But Laura's panicking, and obviously it's like, okay, her daughter dies, and now this woman who has all this information is saying your husband is in danger in Venice. She's like, we have to leave here. I think this was a warning. I think we were meant to run into them. I think it was Christine telling us to go. John flips out and he goes, my daughter is dead. She's not stopping by with messages from these two old neurotic women. And they're, of course, fighting. And Laura is really upset because and she comes to this conclusion, which, again, you like to see someone in a horror movie go, okay, so if you think that, you must think that I'm really ill. Mm. Like, that's where you're right. at, then, like, mute. And she says, well, maybe I am. Like, maybe I left England too soon. Maybe these women were influencing me, you know? And she's saying, like, that's what you think, right? And he's like, that makes sense to me. And Laura says, well, maybe I should get my pills again. And he jumps up to get them. And, you know, he said, they're right here on the table. And Laura's walking us up to her pitch, which is, well, then you should get a couple weeks off and take me back to England and make sure I'm okay. Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, that's very smart, Laura. Like, you're like, even if you disagree with what he's saying, it's like, you're right. If I'm not well, then you should take me home to help me get well. Mm-hmm. Right? And John says, all right, okay. Like, I could probably do that. Again, the wrong attitude to have about this.
Yeah.
But, you know, they sort of talk about it and decide, okay, he'll try to get some weeks off. They'll go back. They'll see their son and take her to her psychiatrist back in England. But he's still kind of mad. And we see Laura put her pill in her sleeve. So we know that she's not actually taking her medication.
Oh, okay.
That night at 4 a.m, they get a call from Anthony Babbage. He's the headmaster of Johnny's boarding school. And he's British, so of course he says, there's been a bit of an accident. A bit of an accident, you say.
A bit.
Uh-oh. Any amount of accidents too much.
Yes, I would agree.
And we see Mr. Babbage's wife grab the phone out of him because he's kind of like hemming and hawing. She says, hi, this is Mandy Babbage. There's been an accident in firing class, which I'm like, is that guns or ceramics? I don't know.
Could be either.
And we see poor Johnny's in the infirmary and he's got a big goose egg on his head. So if it's firing, maybe it was a gun and it
like
hit
a
him
BB
in the head.
Gun type thing.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So again, it's Britain. It's Britain in the 1970s. God knows what
yeah,
these
it's
kids
like,
were up to.
Who knows? They're probably yeah.
yeah. But we're seeing him. We know that he's okay.
Okay.
But obviously that's terrifying. And so.
And like, especially for this family to yes. be like, now something has happened to this child. You're going to think the worst has happened.
Exactly. So Laura leaps up and says, I'm going to get a flight. I'm going to get on the next flight. John says, my wife will be there later today. And he then also, this is a time where you could ask the operator. So he asked the operator to get in the airport so we could start looking for flights. But it's not even open yet. And I was like, what a time.
Just like, the airport's closed. Call the phone to have the phone connect you to the airport. Yeah. Like, it's just such a different world.
And because that doesn't work, he goes out to talk to the hotel manager who's able to find, like, he calls everywhere and finds a charter flight that is going to England that has room. So they're able to get Laura on it, but they have to leave in 10 minutes. So they pack up Laura. John rushes her to the water taxi. And of course, Laura's like, maybe this is an opportunity for you to go with me. Like, just tell the bishop our son was in an accident, like, and come home for a couple of days. They'll get it. But he's like, no, everything is fine, you know. And meanwhile, the hotel manager is telling him, you know, Mr. Baxter, we're closing. So, your stuff's got to be out of here.
Yeah.
It's like, don't worry, it'll be out of here today. The bishop's people is going to come pick it up. So Laura says, again, could you talk to the bishop? He says, just go now, and then I will ask for a couple weeks off. But I just want to finish the bit that we're working on now. And he puts his wife on the water taxi, and we have these beautiful shots of Venice and Julie Christie looking incredible yeah. as she heads off to the take her flight to England. The bishop then comes to the restoration, and we finally see the inside, which is now full of scaffolding. And they're working on all of these, essentially, what seems to be 16th century mosaic murals, right? So he has to get up like 40 or 50 feet up and put in these new tiles. And the bishop has brought him some of the sample mosaic tiles that he's like, these people have worked with my family for 200 years. Like, these are the best in Italy. And so John's excited, but he's obviously very distressed. And so the bishop picks up on that. And John said, you know, my son was in an accident. He's fine. My wife went. And the bishop says, you should have gone with her. It's like, okay, well, I should have called you then, I guess. But then he brings out the mosaic tiles, and John smiles. Like, he's really genuinely excited. Again, like, he's so committed to restoring this thing.
Mosaic tiles.
They're beautiful. And he says, can I compare them? And the bishop says, knock yourself out. So he has to climb up a wooden ladder. Hey. Again, 40 feet up. It's clearly the 70s. And he gets off. He has a platform that can be lowered and raised on ropes.
It does not take a psychic to be like, his life is in danger.
Yeah. Like, oh, any day that thing falls and you're dead. And so basically the way it works is it's a wooden platform you stand on that gets winched up and down. And then it has like essentially a desk on it. And then again, a glass, like a pane of glass that's at an angle above John's head. So okay. He could take it and look between the glass and the light behind it, right? So he's looking at them. He's holding the mosaic tiles up to the mosaic. It looks great, if you ask me. I said they nailed it, wherever this come from. Allison, as we watch, a random board falls from the top of the scaffold.
Of course it does.
It goes, smashes through the glass pane, hits John. He falls, and then the entire platform destabilizes.
Of course.
And he falls off of it. And is, again, groaning, scrambling. And, of course, all these workers are, like, panicking, like, running around. The bishop's underneath him. But, like, if he were to fall, it would kill both of you. Like, he's up too high. And he's frantically trying to grab for the ropes. And so it's, like, a very long sequence of Donald Sutherland, like, screaming and just shouting
around.
And groaning. And all these Italian guys trying to figure out what to do. And one guy gets up there and he's holding out a metal pole, but it's not doing shit because he can't let go of the rope to grab it. And the pole falls and it almost hits the bishop. And finally, one of the workers is able to get the end of the rope and pull him to safety. And they embrace and everyone's clapping that nobody died.
Oh, good.
And the bishop looks grim. And he steps over the mosaic tiles. And I will say, if you're a film student, let us know what you think. I wasn't sure what to think about the bishop's reaction to this. Mm-hmm. Because the bishop seems really, like, on board with the whole thing. Again, said you should have gone with your wife. And then this happens, and I didn't know if the bishop was taking it as an omen. But we see him sort of step over the mosaic tiles. Like,
okay.
Oh, is this fruitless too? Like there's some sort of unrest within the bishop that it never gets resolved. So we see John, understandably, needs to take a walk. So the bishop goes with him. And he finally tells the bishop, my wife was hanging out with these two psychic ladies, and she was warned that I was in danger. It was like a prophecy, and then that thing just happened. And the bishop goes, I'll be honest, I wish I didn't have to believe in prophecy because I hate the idea, but that's kind of the Catholic business. A lot of prophecy going on. Allison, they walk to the canal where a big crowd is gathered, and the bishop says, oh, my God, I hope it's not another murder. Of course it is.
Of course
it is. There's been another murder most foul in Venice. And as we watch, the police pull a woman's waterlogged corpse out of the water. And, of course, John sees it and then sees his daughter in the pond. And I was like, boy, this guy cannot catch a break.
No.
This is nonstop shit from sunup to sundown for this motherfucker. Back at the hotel, John has everything packed up and the bishop's people are supposed to come and take it. It's all going to be taken down. The hotel manager knows all about it. And he finds like different little domestic pieces of Laura, which I like. Like he has like a horrible crinkled up photo in the garbage, a pair of pantyhose, like a tube of toothpaste. And when he gets into the water taxi to go down to the bishop's, he sees a hearse go by. I want a hearse gondola when I die.
Oh, I guess absolutely on a hearse gondola.
Yeah. I guess it would have to go down the LA River, so it'd have to be like one of the few days where it's full. But you guys could pull it off.
It seems like with these atmospheric rivers, you might
any day.
You might be in good shape.
Yeah, he sees the taxi boat. It's all black. It's covered in flowers, and on the front of the boat is Laura, Heather, and Wendy. And Laura and Wendy are all in black, and Heather is in a cunty green snakeskin trench coat, a vinyl trench coat.
Okay.
And a purple scarf. And I'm like, excellent work.
He tries to
shout for his wife. She doesn't turn. None of them turn around. So he turns around and goes back to the hotel. Because he's like, if she's back in town for whatever reason,
she
would have gone back to the hotel.
Right.
He interrupts the manager who's like having sex with some lady in his room. And he's like, what are you doing here? We're closed. We already had this conversation, bitch. And he says, well, did my wife come back? And he's like, she left this morning. Remember, she went to England. We talked about this. I had to call them. And she says, no, like I saw her. Did she come back here? And he's like, no, we're literally closed up. Like literally they had to like undo the lock to let him in. And when he leaves, they do it back up. It's like, that's it. It's a wrap. She's not here. I don't know if he tells him, like, tell her I'm at the police station or whatever. But like he tells him something. She's not there. So now John is extremely distressed because he's like, is my wife there? What should I be doing? Because he's thinking that was her mm-hmm. and that now she's back and not calling him. Mm-hmm. So she's sort of like, are these two women, have they taken her somewhere? Is she sort of under their thrall? And, you know, he sees a baby doll floating in the water and he pulls it out.
Chilling.
And think, what is there left to do? And he goes to the police to basically report his wife missing. Because he's like, I don't know what else to do. He
call
does attempt.
England.
He does. So he does attempt okay. to call the school. The phone lines are down to the school.
Okay.
So he cannot verify whether or not she's made it to the school.
Okay.
So in a panic, he goes to the police, reports his wife missing, and he has them draw Wendy and Heather, like draw their caricature, police like drawing.
Sketch.
Yeah. And, he sits the detective, and the detective, this guy thinks John is an idiot from the second he gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells this guy everything about Christine dying, the seance, Lawrence sudden happiness after the seance, her going, her coming back. And the inspector says, did you have a fight? He says, yeah. Well, he's like, well, a little bit, but I mean, but she went to see the women anyway, and it's totally fine. And then she went to England, and I saw her back here. And the inspector then looks outside and sees Wendy and Heather out the window. And you could see him be like, oh, did this guy kill his wife? And now he just, like, saw some women outside. He's, like, blaming them.
Yeah, I mean, that is, outside yeah. of a horror movie, that is the most logical thing that would have happened here.
And he asks John, you know, if your wife's in Venice, she'll be in touch, right? I mean, what are you afraid of? Like, if she's here, and he's like, my wife is not a well woman. And there's a killer on the loose. And the inspector says, I hadn't thought of that. It's like, good job, inspector.
Wow.
Hadn't thought about the serial killer that seems to be operating in Venice.
Police.
While this man's
terrible
wife disappears.
In the 70s. Terrible now.
Yeah, this guy stinks. The cops stink, which I think is, I'm sure true to life there as it is here.
Yes.
And the inspector basically is like, okay, great. Well, thanks for coming. We're going to take a look for these ladies. And if we find them, we're going to ask them. If we find out anything, we'll be in touch. And he's going to be over at the church. And if he's not at the church, he's going to be at the bishop's quarters. And the inspector, of course, immediately calls the church to, like, sort of check on, like, how's this John guy been doing? Because he's thinking, did this guy kill his wife? And also, is he the killer that's been killing people, right? And which is, like, I think how police operates. Like, I bet some guy I'm going to blame him for a bunch of murders rather than, like, actually look at anything. And we see that the inspector has put a tail on John. So there's a guy following him, presumably wondering, is he going to return to the scene of the crime? And as this guy follows him at a distance, we see John cross a bridge, and he looks into the water, and he sees Christine's body. Obviously, it's a memory. Yeah. And when he looks up, Allison, he sees a figure in a red coat ducking back into an alleyway. Allison, I have to ask you at this point, who will survive?
Who will survive?
The wife is alive, and okay, I think great. That Donald Sutherland is going to die. And the psychic of the two women is correct, that his life is in danger.
Okay, great. Are the ladies going to make it?
I think yes. I think he's the only one who does.
Okay, great.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra-large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.
John wanders until he finds the psychic sister's building, and the guy tailing him sort of ducks into that same cafe where John had waited for Laura the other night. And then John rings for the hotel manager, who doesn't speak English. She gets her sister. She doesn't speak English. And he's trying to describe the sisters. And they're like, oh, the sisters. Yeah. And so they go and they just open up the door. He's like, what? Alice and the sisters are gone.
Of course they are.
The room is all packed up. Yeah. It's all packed up. It's all cleaned up. And the tail joins him and walks him and says, hi, I am Sabioli. I'm from the murder squad. And again, I'm like, is that how they do it? They
just
introduce themselves? I mean... meanwhile, we see Wendy and Heather are in a new, very nice hotel, right? So they're in a different hotel. They've moved on. And John goes to see the bishop, who's the only other guy who's in this who can help him. Like, he's already gone to the cops.
Yes, they're useless.
He tried to go to the women. Yeah. They're gone. Yeah. And the bishop's secretary is a nun. And there's like this really interesting scene that I think if I was Italian or in the 70s or had any other information, the secretary says like, oh, the bishop will be out soon. And we see the bishop, and it's a bishop and another guy sitting silently across from a beautiful widow. And then the guy starts to write things down. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if it's like they're going to pay her for something that happened, or this is a comment on how in Venice things happen like this all the time. Okay. Like maybe things have happened, yes. But it's like the bishop, we get no information about what that woman is doing there or what they're, but it's sort of like some secretive other thing that's happening, implying that perhaps that is simply the state of things and that this is simply one of many stories and crimes and dramatic turns that is happening in this city.
Yes, sort of how I took it. That makes sense.
Yeah. And so he says, while John's waiting, he says, can I call England? And she says, fine, you have to fill out a form. So he has to fill out a long-distance call form. And meanwhile, Savioli, the murder squad guy, is just standing there waiting for him. Finally, he's able to get through the school, and he talks to the Babbages, and they say Johnny is totally fine. He's up and about. Like the doctor said, he's going to be fine to be let go today. Oh, and here's your wife. She'll tell you about it. Allison, Laura takes the phone. She's totally fine. She says, oh, I'm such a relief. He's great. It wasn't a big thing. I didn't have to come here, but I'm really glad that I did. So I'll fly back this evening. There's a 9 o'clock flight. So I'll be here. I'll get in probably around 11 o'clock and I'll come get you. And we get like a late dinner. And John's like, I saw you on a boat. I saw you. I thought you were dead. Like John is fucked up. He's like, I saw you. Right. And she's like, look, I'm really sorry. I was really freaked out by everything. I think sounds like maybe you're freaking out. Everything's fine. Just stay at the bishop's. I will be at around 10 and I will come right there.
Again, if he had also told her that he saw their daughter, like an image of that, then it's like, wow, okay, we're really piecing together. Like there's a lot going on with you.
Exactly. And again, like so many of these movies, his denial is what leads this to become a tragedy. Yes. If he had told his wife, but then it's also giving into her idea of the supernatural or his wife, his daughter's spirit, which again would be better than when things are headed for him, unfortunately. And he says, oh, thank God. Okay, great. Then I will be at the bishop's. I will see you tonight. Meanwhile, the police have hauled in Heather. So they found the sisters and they have brought in Heather to the police station. She is in a cell. And Wendy has gone to the British Council to like try to get legal help for her sister. Because they're like, what the fuck is going on? And Savioli, I'm assuming Savioli told John, he goes down there to the police station to find Heather. Heather's panicking. She's like, I'm blind. I'm in a police station. I don't know what the fuck's going on. And John says, I'm so sorry. This is absolutely my fault. He's like, we were taken out of our hotel and arrested, and we were grilled about your wife's disappearance. What happened to her? And she's like, actually, she's fine. She's in England. That's on me. Yep, my bad. Can I walk you back to your new hotel? You know, and she says, that's fine. Well, that's the least you could do. And then my sister said she'll come back there. So we'll see her there. Meanwhile, we also see Laura land at the airport. And from here until the end of the movie, it's just Laura missing John by seconds, like everywhere he's at. I know. And the driver's chatting with her and picking her up and like taking her to the water taxi. And John's walking with Heather. And as they walk, she says that she always, her sister hates Venice. She describes it as a city in aspic, like a city that used to be very vital and now it's frozen in time and it's just
suspended
built on ghosts.
And jelly.
Yeah. But for her, it's really helpful because the way that it's set up with the canals and the narrow streets, she can kind of navigate using echolocation. She's like, so I can hear when I hit the canal, I can hear it, everything. Okay. I was like, that would actually be really great. You're getting a lot more feedback. Meanwhile, the water taxi driver is driving Laura and she says, we are going the wrong way. We're going to the bishop's. And the driver says, well, I was going to take you to Mr. Baxter, the last name, but he's at the police station. We're almost there. Well, I'll just take you to the police station. Get out of my cab, you know? So she's going to the police station. Meanwhile, John is almost to Heather and Wendy's new hotel.
Okay.
At the hotel, Heather hands John her key. They're in room 307. Wendy's back and is like relieved, like, oh, thank God. You know, and Heather says, well, John got me out of prison and was really nice to me and walked me back. And Wendy's like, well, good, because apparently you're the reason that she was there to begin with. And they've already laid out their family photos and the little wooden bust in the same way.
Okay.
Right? So they're in the same exact way.
As the other hotel room.
Right, which I'm assuming is part of their deal.
Yeah.
Wendy goes out of the room, much like she did with Laura, to go get water. Meanwhile, at the police station, the inspector says, oh, no, sorry. John Joe's taken the Heather back to her house. Let me write down the address. So she writes out the address on the back of the police sketch. And so now Laura has to go find him at this random hotel. Meanwhile, I'm like, just stay at the police station. He'll figure it out. There's only three places you could possibly be. Just stay there, you know? However, as John starts to leave Heather and Wendy, Heather starts seizing. And as he sort of steps out, he's like, oh, sorry. And he steps out. And as soon as he starts walking out of the hotel, Heather begs her sister, go stop him. Go, go fetch him. Fetch him back. Screaming at her to not let him go out because something bad is about to happen to him. Wendy runs outside. It's a little too late. John is gone. But she does catch Laura just as Laura's running up to the hotel. Wendy grabs her and hauls her inside. And so they're sort of talking, like, trying to catch her up, what's going on. And only for Heather to freak out and start screaming, get out of Venice! Leave Venice!
I mean, so great Laura advice at this point.
Exactly, yeah. You need to give a little more details, but, like, she's doing her best. Yeah. She's telling her to get
the fuck out of town. She's trying to communicate.
And so Laura, panicked, runs out to try to find John. Because, again, she knows they've said this before. They have to go find him. So, meanwhile, John's walking. Allison, as John walks through the Venetian night, he sees the little figure in red running alongside the canal. And so he starts chasing the figure from across the canal, basically. Mm-hmm. He tries to steal a boat to chase them down, but the owner runs out and screams at him, don't steal my gondola! So John abandons it. The figure turns and runs down an alley. And John follows it in a decision that perhaps ranks in the top 10 fatal mistakes. Mm. In order to trap the figure in with him,
yes,
he closes and locks the gate behind them.
Hey.
And much like Rorschach said in the Watchmen book, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. So as soon as I saw that, I'm like, well, that's the end of that, isn't it?
Bye-bye.
So he's following the figure, and it's all these, like, you know, broken stone, dark alleys. Mm-hmm. They're inside a building. Whether they're inside or outside becomes unknowable. It's foggy. It's dark. He passes in and out of light. Laura, meanwhile, emerges near the canal. To the canal near the boat and sees the owner there and hears running and sort of can figure out that has run through this gate, which is now locked. Meanwhile, John hears crying. The figure's crying.
Okay.
He sees a red hood through an archway and he says, I'm coming. And in that moment, it is his daughter. He's running after his daughter. You know, as any child, parent who's lost a child, it's like, I'm sure you're always running after her. And he runs up the spiral staircase and he gets to an abandoned room, a stone room. There's no windows. And he sees the figure standing facing the corner, very Blair Witch, wearing a red pointed coat and short like a little girl.
Yeah.
And he approaches them and he says, I'm a friend. I won't hurt you. And just as the figure starts to turn, he gets a flash of the red figure in the slide from the beginning. And he says, wait, wait. And when the figure turns around, it's not his daughter.
No.
It's just what I would describe as a little old weird gal.
Oh, sure.
And she takes a straight razor out of her pocket and slashes his throat.
Oof.
And John collapses.
That's a tough way to go.
Meanwhile, Laura's at the gate screaming, darling, my darlings. And he collapses, and when he falls, his foot goes through the window, and blood starts dumping down the side of the building as he's bleeding out. And we end on his funeral gondola, motoring down, and on it is, of course, Wendy, Heather, and Laura in the same outfits they wore in his vision. Only this time it's real, and they park, and Laura sort of smiles fondly. And I think we're supposed to think, like, as tragic as this was, like, she knows that there is a life afterwards and that he is now with their daughter.
Yes.
So it's horrible, but also, like, she has a sense of comfort in that. And they stop and they land on the dock and they are greeted by the bishop. And with her is their son, Johnny. This poor kid had to deal with all this. And they walk inside with Heather and Wendy. And behind them from the other hearse, or from the other funeral gondola, they bring John's coffin into the church he was repairing in Venice. The end.
Wow.
I know.
What a good one.
It's a great one. Such a good one. It's so well done.
Oh my God.
It's so great. It's great. It's great on a rewatch too.
Yeah, you know? I bet.
So also, what are some fatal mistakes you think people have made in... What? Oh, my God. Don't look now.
Yeah.
Fatal mistakes.
Not telling people that you're seeing things. Like, I think then, like, his wife would have probably been like, why don't you push pause on work? Let's get out of here. I'm getting a lot of information that, like, your life is in danger. Also, you seem unwell. I've been unwell. Our son is unwell in England after a firing accident. Let's, like, go home for a minute and, like, regroup. But
absolutely. And I think we're to think, like, he, you know, I think the church to me is the main metaphor. It's like he cannot allow himself to believe in the afterlife or the supernatural, because to even approach that would be to really deal with the death of his daughter, right? And so instead of that, he's going to spend his time, like you said, like the church is collapsing forever. So we're going to spend time putting together a mosaic on a building that's falling apart. Mm-hmm. And everything is falling apart. And all he had the these images. Yes, the foundation is gone. And instead of dealing with that, which would have been potentially going back to England after he got the omen, he stays and insists upon, he wants to commit to the reality that he's experiencing rather than the reality that keeps trying to break through and tell him, don't follow this person.
Yeah.
That's not your daughter. Deal with your daughter's death so you don't chase this figure.
Yes.
Is sort of what I take from it. Other fatal mistakes. I don't know. I think Laura was doing the best she could.
I agree.
She's trying to be upfront with him about everything.
Yeah. She, and I think her attitude in kind of pursuing this woman who has contact with her dead daughter, like it felt like weirdly healthy.
Yes. Yeah. She
didn't have expectations of like reconnecting or like, I think she just wanted some peace of mind. And I think that that's, not an unhealthy place to be following such a tragedy.
And it's an interesting choice, too. We don't see the sisters tell her that John is in danger.
Right.
We see her report it. And I think that's supposed to be like, John, because of their experience before the movie starts, John doesn't trust her or like knows that she was mentally unwell. So if we had seen the sisters say it, it would give sort of like more weight to it versus the weight it's supposed to have is in their relationship, you know? So it's like they're bringing their relationship into their consideration of these different factors. If someone else had told him this, maybe he would have considered it, but it's like you're bringing it into your relationship with your spouse, which is colored by everything that has happened up to this point, which I thought was an interesting way to play that rather than see a full seance where you see her say it like it possessed or something, which I feel like people would do now. And it's like, you didn't need that.
No, we just need the information. Yeah.
And how this really was about their relationship and their marriage and their family and those things, you know, how that unit becomes, how people understand that unit when it gets destroyed.
Yes.
But what a gosh darn.
Wow.
Great. Movie. And then finally, where would you put Don't Look Now on the spooky scale, Allison?
A spooky scale.
I think that this is a 5. I think it's a lot of like suspenseful moments of like not knowing, you know, what's real, what's not, what is he seeing is like, I think the uncertainty of like where he is both in like the metaphysical world and also in actual Venice especially at the end is scary. But then a lot of it is also, in my mind, manageable.
Yes. I think this is why I do think it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
But I think if you could also understand it as a thriller. It is thrilling.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I think a 5. What about you?
I'm going to give it a 6. This really got me. Got me the first time.
Yeah.
First time I saw him almost fall. There's something about that scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
Like, that I found so jarring. So I'm going to give it a 6. I really, what an incredible movie.
Wow.
We hope you enjoy the beginning of March Madness.
Yes. And we'll be driving you mad all month with more maddening films. And if you aren't a member of our Patreon, just a reminder that that's there with, you know, there will be 2 March Madness movies by the end of the month and 2 of every theme that we do. So there's extra episodes and some live show videos and ad-free. So if you're not yet familiar with Patreon, by all means, go check it out and consider joining.
And until then,
please keep it spooky. Don't forget to follow us at Ruin Podcast and Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok for show updates. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review. We're your writers and hosts, Hallie Kiefer and Allison Leiby. The show is executive produced by Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder, and recorded and edited by Kat Iosa. From Crooked Media, our executive producer is Kendra James, with production and promotional support from Ari Schwartz, Kyle Sieglin, Julia Beach, Caroline Dunphy, and Awa Okolade.
Hot off the press from Maybelline, New York, it's new Lifter Plump, an intense plumping lip gloss formulated with chili pepper to deliver a heated sensation for an instant plumping effect that lasts. From 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Red Flag, Hot Honey, Cocoa Zing, and more. An extra large wand applicator transforms lips in one swipe. Learn more at Maybelline.com. For a limited time, get 10% off your Lifter Plump purchase on Amazon with code 10PLUMP.